Hello everyone, my name is Elijah Davis, Minister of South Carolina, Carl Charlie Slab, Attorney Congregation out of South Carolina, and the Elgin, Texas. Today is May 31, 2025, or it is the 6th day of Sivan, 2029. We will start our first service today with a song and with prayer, and then we will go on into two chanted readings, number 26. We're on Shintoism and non-progressive Christianity. Church of address by the Beachy Hall of February the 7th, 1948. Okay. Shintoism and non-progressive Christianity. What is it? That's my question. For our text for this afternoon is found in Jeremiah 10:23. O Yahweh, I know that the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man that walketh to the righteous steps. In this verse, we are told that the way man should go is not in himself, that he of himself does not know how to direct his steps. Someone else must direct him if he is to go in the right direction. For this very reason, all these people are led by a prophet and are preserved by a prophet. Hosea 12:13. So it was that through the medium of the prophets, Yahweh led and preserved the church of the Old Testament, and by the same spirit he founded and has to this day preserved the New Testament church, although the spirit that rebelled against Yahweh's leadership anciently is still in the church today. Naturally, men are unconscious of the fact that they cannot direct their own steps, even after Yahweh starts them out in the right direction, as a father starts out his little son. For we should never forget that when the Yahweh's ancient people rejected the prophets, including John the Baptist, Yahshua, and the apostles, when he could no longer lead them, their feet slipped in every direction. So they fell from grace and lost everything. Only the followers of the prophets remain with Yahweh, and they only compose the Christian church and its beginning. No other than Yahweh did direct their steps into the church. Let us take another example. The world at large today, with a few exceptions, is the Buddhist, Mohammedan, or a Christian. Two-thirds of the world population is still following in the steps of Buddha, who lived about 550 years before the Yahshua. Think of it. Two-thirds, a little less than a billion, of the world's inhabitants are still followers of the Buddha. Now, who was Buddha? What kind of a man was he? Was he a good or a bad man? Okay. Was he a deceiver or was he a teacher of righteousness? Okay, it says, to find the answer, let us first take into consideration the kind of people he was in contact with. He was not in touch with the Hebrews, nor with the Christians, but only with degraded people of the Orient, and those who did not come in contact with the Buddha's teachings were those of the South Sea Islands, and particular, and are to a large extent still cannibals. For the taking of these effects into the consideration before the passing judgment, we may ask, what did Buddha deceive his followers from? From nothing is the overall answer. And what did he lead them into? History gives this answer. What he taught the people was that they should seek salvation not through the observance of the religious rites and ceremonies, but through honesty and purity of the heart, through charity and tenderness and compassion toward all creatures that have life. And that's found in General History, page 66. I said, since the Buddha kind of teaching certainly does not come from the devil, and since he led his followers from the bad to better, he could not have been a deceiver. Buddha, moreover, not only taught good morals, but if history is reliable, he himself lived up to what he taught. Finally, in the keeping with his great influence, he could have been a rich man. But he died poor, and if the standards of living have any virtues at all, Buddha standards, if lived up to, could have lifted the people of the Orient higher than the level of many so-called Christians in our day. For the Buddha, therefore, appears to have been a preacher of righteousness in his day, for his standard of behavior was practically the standard of the Ten Commandments. The standards of the Bible. Where did he get such a standard? Certainly not from the devil. We may now ask the question, was Yahweh in the Buddha's day interested only in the Hebrew nation? Did he entirely neglect the rest of the world, and did he deliberately permit a third of the earth's inhabitants to be led by the Buddha from bad to worse, or did he see that they be led from bad to better? There is but one answer that we can honestly and wisely give. of the hour, truth or Buddha did for the heathen that which could not have been done to the Moses or to any of the Hebrew prophets. Comparatively speaking, God is to the Buddha raised the heathen from the pit in which they were as many inches up as Moses raised the Hebrews from the pit in which they were. For the Hebrews rose much closer to the outer than the followers of the Buddha, because the pit in which Buddha found the heathen was much deeper than the pit in which Moses found the Hebrew nation. For the Buddha himself never thought that after his death he would be worshipped as a god by his followers, no more than the prophets, the apostles, and Mary, the mother of Yeshua. As such, they would be worshipped after their death. You can now see that while Buddha resurrected the steps of his people, the people were led closer to the standards of the Bible and to the ideals of the Christian they were before his death. Since this is so, then Buddha was not a deceiver. As soon as Buddha died, though, his followers ran against a wall, as it were, and their progress toward the Yahweh, for the Bible and the Asher, stopped where Buddha stopped. Indeed, they could not have advanced further, for they made the death of Buddha become their block against the progress toward the Yahweh. How did they do it? It is a known fact that when the people give credit of a divine deed to a finite being, then their hope of another is great or greater ever coming. To help them is forever gone, for they do not believe that the Yahweh lives, that he will raise another even greater to lead them further, but believe that there is no need of another and no need for more truth. Consequently, as they do not expect another, when one came, they reject him. Thus, the Buddhists put a stop to their spiritual progress. So you see that when the light that is in you becomes darkness, how great is that darkness? Matthew 6:23. Judging from the experiences of the past, the freedom of a nation, and the assassin's foes this year are likely to bring forth another god, Mohammed, Trey Gandhi. He is likely to become the Buddha of today. Yes, to a Hindu millions already given to Mr. Gandhi as a credit for all of his good and righteous deeds. He, like Buddha, certainly was a good man with the high standard and good morals, the standard and knows of the Bible and of the Lost Spirit. This brings us to another hard question to answer. Since Gandhi lived in the Christian era, why did he not become a Christian? Perhaps he would have, but I suppose he took into account that to become a Christian and join the Christian church would lower rather than lift his standard of behavior. As he saw it, it looked to him that a so-called Christian nation was sapping the blood of his people, that she was abusing and treating them as inferior human beings. In fact, he himself, for his stand on the national decency and national freedom, spent about 12 years in jail. These are the things that most likely kept Mr. Gandhi from joining the Christian church and people. He certainly did not turn away from Christianity to avoid any sacrifices or to indulge in any sin, for the Gandhi theory, moreover, for freedom by the nonviolence, by neither sword nor gun, succeeded and freed over 400 million people who had been the servants of the strong for nearly 200 years. This he accomplished while the Christians were killing one another by the thousands. These are some of the things which most likely kept Mr. Gandhi from becoming a Christian. I think this word Christian is misused. I think D.T. Hallett would have been better off to call it like it was and call it Catholic. Let us now, for a moment, consider Muhammad, and to whom something like 220 million people bow. What kind of man was he? Was he a deceiver? Or was he a teacher of righteousness? Let us also consider the people who were taught by him. They were the descendants of the Lot and Abraham, Moabites, Esau's and Ishmael's, etc. All of them bitter enemies of the Hebrews and their religion. Since Muhammad had led millions of Arabs closer to the Hebrew Christian religion than the so-called Christians in his day would have led them, it is hardly possible that he was a deceiver. He led his followers to a higher moral standard of living, modesty, cleanliness, regularity of the prayer, and biblical diet than the Christians of his day would have led them. Muhammad's theory of religion, according unto history, and as the Mohammedanism has it now, is this. For Mohammedanism, the name commonly given in the, this I'll call it, Christian countries, is a Catholic countries, I'll call it, to the creed established by the Muhammad, his followers call their creed Islam. And the Catholics created Islam in the 7th century A.D. And the name of that Islam was Muhammad, submission to the decrees of Yahweh. And their common formulas of the faith and the blood of Yahshua is this: there is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet. Let's read that again and revise it. His followers call their creed Islam. Entire submission to the decree of Yahweh. They call it to the decree of God. And their common formula of faith is: there is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet. For the dogmatic or theoretical part of the Mohammedanism embraces the following points. Number one, belief in God, who is without beginning or end, the sole creator and Lord of the universe, having absolute power, knowledge, glory, and perfection. Number two, belief in his angels, who are impeccable beings, created of light. Number three, belief in the good and evil, Jinn, who are created as a smokeless fire and are subject to death. Number four, the belief in the Holy Scriptures, which are his uncreated words revealed to the prophet. Of these, there now exists, but in a greatly corrupted form, the Pentateuch, the Psalms, and the Gospel, and in an incorruptible state, the Quran, which abrogates and surpasses all of the preceding revelation. See Quran, and number five, belief in the Yahweh, prophets, and apostles, the most distinguished of whom are Adam, Noah, Abraham, Moses, Jesus, and Muhammad. If they don't believe in Jesus for salvation, then what is it? Is it for them to believe in all of Moses and Abraham and all of them? Is the greatest of them all, the last of the prophets, and the most excellent of the creatures of the earth. Number six, belief in a general resurrection and final judgment, and in the future reward and punishment, chiefly of the physical nature. Belief, even to the extent of the fatalism of the Yahweh's absolute foreknowledge and predestination of all events for good and evil. 20th Century Cyclopedia, 567. In the view of the fact that Muhammad led his people closer to the religion of the Bible than they had been before, they'd be truly be called a deceiver? If so, tell me what did he deceive them from? Since Muhammad was so near to believing to the Catholic religion, as each Holocaust was called the Christian religion, each Holocaust made the same mistake that everybody else before him. The Catholics insisted on being called Christian, and everybody complied and called them Christian. When you tell me Christian, I think of the Protestants, the Baptists, the Methodists, and so forth. I don't think. But in this case, when you say Christian, you're talking about the Catholic religion. The Catholics are the ones that created Mohammed. We may ask, why did he not become a Christian or Catholic? Well, it's the same difference. Let us consider the possibility that Jesus has prevented him from doing so. Doing. Muhammad lived in the 7th century of the Catholic era, not the Christian era, the Catholic era. By the midst of the 1260 years prophecy of the Inquisition of the Catholic Church, being in charge of church and state affairs all over the world. And the midst of the dark ages of the religion, when the Catholic Church was the deepest and the idol of worship, grasped and morality practices that are prohibited by the scriptures. If nothing else, Jesus has kept him from joining the Catholic Church. He didn't have to join it. He was a spin-off of the Catholic Church. Men have been idol, worshipped along with the prevalent use of the sponsored practice that is against all Bible religion, but is enough to turn Muhammad from the Catholic religion during the Dark Ages. Furthermore, Muhammad, I believe, did the very best he could, considering that in his time, the so-called Christian church, the so-called Christian church that the Catholics call themselves, was at a very low ebb, and that his morals and behavior were much higher than were the morals and behavior of the Christianized pagans. In the view of all this, you can say that Muhammad was a bad man, that he was a deceiver. Okay, let's continue. Well, Muhammad, I believe, did the very best he could, considering that in his time, the so-called Christian church, the Catholic church, was at a very low ebb, and that his morals and behavior were much higher than were the morals and behavior of the Christianized pagans by the Catholic Church. And in view of all this, you can say that the Muhammad was a bad man, that he was a deceiver. Well, I say he was a bad man and he was a deceiver. That's what he was raised up for by the Catholic Church in the 7th century. Are we still inclined why the Yahweh permitted Muhammad to teach his religion unto millions of the earth's inhabitants? And do we still wonder why he did not become a Christian? The better question, and why he did not become a Catholic Christian? If so, here is a second answer. For the Yahweh permitted the hand because Muhammad is making the people better than they were, and because Muhammadism in that day brought one closer to the religion of the Bible than could have paganized Christianity, or then paganized a Christian Rome. So why are the Mohammedans still Mohammedans? Mohammedans are still Mohammedans for the same reason that the Buddhists are still Buddhists. That is because after the Mohammed died, they did just what the Buddhists did in the progress of the religion. The Mohammedans stopped where the Mohammed stopped. Okay. And at his tomb, where they stopped there to make sure that the believers would never join another sect. And where they taught the people that there was to be no other prophet, that the Muhammad was the last, that there was no need for another, that they had all of the truth to lead them into the pearly gates. That's the corrupt Mohammedanism drill. This false idea into the minds of the common people, then and still more a corrupted Mohammedanism of today, like all other sects, including corrupt Adventism, still does the same. Thus it is that no sect as a people, but only as an individual, has ever accepted an additional message. And this is the reason for the multi-sectarian world. So to ask why the Mohammedans and the Buddhists are still Mohammedans and Buddhists. Why have they not advanced since the Mohammedans and the Buddha died? For it's like asking why the prophets have not yet become virgins, why the virgins have not yet become Presbyterians, why the Presbyterians have not yet become Methodists, why the Methodists have not yet become Baptists, why the Baptists have not yet become the Seventh-day Adventists, and why Seventh-day Adventists has not yet become, I'm going to say, a Virginian Seventh-day Adventist, which is the Shepherd God. That's what Beauty Hollis says here, that I have the Shepherd God. The overall answer is that each successive denomination has failed to keep pace with the progress of the truth because each has failed to climb higher in the heights of the founder of each respective denomination could possibly have led them in his lifetime. For the Jews never rose higher than the heights under which Moses led them. When Moses died, they, as it were, died with him, so far as the spiritual progress was concerned. Thus it was that they rejected until the prophets that came after the Moses, not sparing the son of Yahweh. For For the sins never grows higher than the heart on which Moses led them. When the Moses died, they, as it were, died with him. So far as the spiritual progress was concerned, thus it was that they rejected until the prophets that came after the Moses, not sparing the son of Yahweh. For the same spirit prevailed in the Catholic Church, calling themselves Christians, during the Inquisition of the 1260-year prophecy from 538 A.D. to 1798, the Dark Ages, that the Catholic Church ruled church and state. She never rose above the level on which the apostles left her, and for a time she even fell almost to the bottom of the pit, and she would have dropped out had Yahweh not again visited his people in the persons of the Luther, Knox, Wesley, Campbell, and the other reformers to whom the Yahweh brought to light certain parts of the Bible truth that had long been trampled underfoot, but did the Catholic Christian world as a whole see the light, and did a whole walk in it? No, indeed not. Not as a people, but only as individuals. This is what accounts for the present multi-sectarian world. That is, as it became necessary for Yahshua to organize a new church, the Christian, separate from the mother church, the Jewish, in his day. Just so the reformers found themselves cast out from the mother churches and necessarily were obliged to organize the followers of the advancing church into a new denomination, one after another. In this slide you see the spirit which keeps the Jews still Jews, the Buddhists still Buddhists, the Mohammedans still Mohammedans, in other words, Muslims. These Mohammedans are Muslim murdering evil people, descendants of Ishmael and Esau, the ones that Yahweh rejected, the Catholics still Catholic, the Lutherans still Lutheran, the Methodist still Methodist, the Baptist still Baptist. The very same spirit is today waiting, or today working within our own denomination, the Seventh-day Adventists, presumptuously believing that they are rich and increasingly good and have need of nothing more, but to think that it's dead. Founder was the last in the time line of the prophets, that there is no need of another. It feels certain that the light and energy in its ship Zion is sufficient to take it to the shore of the kingdom. Okay, though they well know that their message, the judgment for the dead, is not the last, but that the judgment for the living, the which they do not yet have, is the last. This spirit of the sliding back, rather than going forward, of the opposing spiritual growth, and at the same time fostering the spirit of the lukewarmness, is successfully working with me and the spot of the fact that the prophecies of the Bible which point unto our day are unto them still missing. They care not to know them. There is therefore yet a great work to be done, not only for all nations, kindreds, tongues, and peoples, but for the church herself, if any are to be saved from the coming doom, according unto the Jeremiah prophecy, corrupt Christianity with the Catholic Church doctrine is nothing short of a form of Shintoism. There you have the meaning of Shintoism. Accepting and practicing that false doctrine of the Catholic Church of three in one persons of the Godhead, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit as one God, and calling yourself Christian, that is Shintoism. Jeremiah 10, 1 to 5. Hear ye the word, which Yahweh speaketh unto you, O house of Israel. This says Yahweh, learn not the way of the heathen, and be not dismayed at the signs of heaven. For the heathen are dismayed at them, for the customs of the people are vain, for one cutteth the tree out of the forest, as the work of the hand of the workman with the axe. They deck it with the silver and with gold. They pass it with the nail and with the hammer, that it move not. They are upright as a palm tree, but speak not. They must be born because they cannot go. Be not afraid of them, for they cannot do evil, neither also is in them to do good. For the widely used Christmas tree on the 25th day of December as a tree cut down from its source of life and passing up about a nail does not symbolize a birth, but rather one's death. And it is a spiritual effort to make him live by the cutting down of the tree for the heathen. It symbolizes their dead tree, and by propping it up, it symbolizes life through one, as old one be dead. Now the fact that this spurious Christmas tree is widely celebrated not only by the so-called Protestant Christian Sunday teaching world, but also obtained from the Catholic Church, but also by the non-Christian. The world by this act is worshiping the dead, a form of Shintoism. Worshiping the dead prophets and killing the living ones is a brutal effort to block the progress of the truth, to deceive self and others. Finally, as it had it not been for the fact that some wise awake ones throughout the ages have dared take up their cause and follow Yahweh through his a prophet in order to be led by one height of the truth to another, the world would not have stood this long. There is no doubt. The church from the creation till today has been led and preserved by the prophet, and she can continue in no other way from here on. Okay, that's the end of number 26. And we got 15 minutes to go on this hour. Number 27, two timely greetings, read the order. This is chronically ill with too much knowledge. and too little understanding. Okay. So we just go right on into the subject. This is a church that has a Vichy Hall, February the 14th, 1948. Okay. It says, for the illustration of the subject of our study this afternoon, let us take for example the book which the denomination has put out on the Daniel and the Revelation for the two most valued books of the Bible. It shouldn't use that word in value. It should use the two most valuable assistant books of the Bible. For the book that I have in the mind was originally entitled Thoughts on the Daniel and the Revelation, for it is written in the scholarly fashion. And so conveniently, or its contents, or so convincingly, are its contents, that the thousands of the copies have been sold all over the world in a number of the languages. Anyone that can write a book like it evidently has the great knowledge. For we should, however, examine to see how much understanding is there on the books of the Daniel and of the Revelation themselves. Take, for example, Revelation chapter 12, where it speaks of the 12 stars there, crown moment. The denomination in the book I mentioned explains that this woman is a symbol of the Christian church, that her son carrying the Christian church. Now this is talking about the apostolic church of the Jews of the cross, that her son carrying is teaching of the plan of salvation, the brother of the everlasting covenant of the Yahshua, which they conveniently call the gospel. Yahweh spelled it out in the Hebrew law. And the public seemed to take it very naturally. If the brethren were asked the question, how could the woman be a symbol of the apostolic church and at the same time belong unto Yahshua, our mother, our unbeliever. Let's read that over again. But if the brethren were asked the question, how could the woman be a symbol of the apostolic church and at the same time be the Yahshua's mother? They will have a time answer for the Yahshua himself brought to the apostolic church and to being 30 or more years after he was born. Consequently, she could not be his mother. And if they were asked, how could the woman's son 30 symbolize the apostolic church filled with the plan of the salvation of the faith and the blood of Yahshua, Hebrews chapter 10, as you contend, they would have a hard time answering, for she was filled with the Son before the Yahshua was born, and before the teaching of the plan of the salvation of the blood of the Yahshua by the faith even came into being. Were these questions put to the brethren, I am sure, they would become profoundly confused and the time to answer. But the fact that no one asked this question shows that there is altogether too little understanding throughout the Christendom. Okay. Again, you cannot deny the fact that the Seventh-day Adventist denomination has made a very scholarly exposition of the seven trumpets of the time through such an intricate symbolism, copying their explanations of it with the commentaries and history, and making the people take it as nice as they do. By their scholarly method, though, they contend that the locusts, which were released as soon as the heavenly stars unlocked the bottomless pit at the signing of the fifth chapter, Revelation 9:1-3, are symbolical of the honors of the Mohammedans. This they do in spite of the fact that the locusts were not to kill anybody, but only to torment those who had not the seal of it and their forehead, whereas the Mohammedans killed everybody that stood against them, especially the apostolic Jews, those who had the seal. Moreover, the brethren explained that the 200 million horses and horsemen that were to kill a third part of man, Revelation 9:18, are symbolical of a Mohammedan cavalry. Although the Mohammedans never had such a large cavalry in all of their existence. Furthermore, John the Revelator plainly tells that the horses' tails were like a serpent, and their heads as the heads of the lions, belching fire, smoke, and brimstone. Contrary unto these facts, the brethren say that the horses were common Arabian horses, that the Turks armed with the guns were riding them, that John failed to detect that the fire, smoke, and brimstone came from the guns, not from the horse's mouth. I say for one to so garble the scriptures and yet make people believe that he is thus unfolding truth, he must have great ability, but too little understanding of the fact that if John was led to blunder in this part of his vision, he could have been led to blunder all through the revelation, and that for anyone who thus voices his opinion of the scriptures is not building, but tearing down the faith in all of the prophets, causing one to say that the scriptures be so imperfect as they make them appear to be, then what good are they? And how can we find the truth and be saved by it? For if the prophets themselves could not tell the facts, then how can any of us do so? Thousands of years after their time. Since the brethren have not been able to see this, and since no one he has studied the expositions of them, been able to either, then does it not appear unto you that although there is much knowledge everywhere, there is very little understanding anywhere. Dealing with the situation similar to this, Paul declared in 1 Corinthians 3:1, and I, brethren, should not speak unto you as unto the spiritual, but as unto the carnal, even as unto babes in the Yeshua. Here the Paul is with the reproving of those whose knowledge seemed to be great, but their understanding dull. Those who had not spiritually advanced commensurate with the time, who could not stick strictly to what the word said, were not developed into the full-grown anti-apostolic Jewish believers. He was therefore urged to say, 1 Corinthians 3:2, I have fed you with the milk and not with the meat. For the hitherto for you were not able to bear, neither yet now are you able. For the Paul was disappointed with the progress which the Corinthians had made. They were still unable to take strong meat, concretely speaking, he said. 1 Corinthians 3:3, for where ye are yet carnal, but whereas there is among you an envying and strife and divisions, are ye not carnal and walk as men? For while one saith, I am of the Paul, and another, I am of the Apollos, are ye not carnal? By taking sides, some for Paul and some for Apollos, they were actually accepting what the Yahweh had sent through one messenger and rejecting what he had sent through the other messenger. This is, will see even more vividly in the verses which follow. It's 1 Corinthians 3:5-7. Who then is Paul and who is Apollos? Really, as ministers, that whom ye believe, even as the Yahweh gave unto every man, I have planted, Apollos watered, but Yahweh gave the increase. So then neither is he that planteth anything, neither he that watereth, but Yahweh that giveth the increase. Yahweh is everything, and the men of his appointment are only his mouthpieces. 1 Corinthians 3:8-9. Now he that planteth and he that watereth are one, and every man shall receive his own reward according unto his own labor. For we are the laborers together with the Yahweh. Ye are the Yahweh's husbandry. Ye are the Yahweh's building. For this side choosing was ruining the apostolic believers of the Jews, of the Jewish party, and the politics. And it is running them in the Jewish spiritual Jew of the day, the Seventh-day Adventist, in our day. That is, people are setting their affections on men who bring them the knowledge of the gospel rather than on the one who sends them with the gospel. And worse than this is the fact that multitudes are sending their affection even on men who have not a spark of inspiration, men who are not sent by the Yahweh at all, but who are running loose of their own accord. 1 Corinthians 3:10. According to the grace of the Yahweh, which is given unto me as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another builder thereof, but let every man take heed how he buildeth thereupon. For the apostolic life is, as the Jewish religion, is as it were a building under construction. One messenger of the Yahweh lays the foundation, another builds thereupon. Thus, no one messenger is given all of the material with which to build. Consequently, if anyone should choose to give heed unto this or to that the messenger instead of to Yahweh and to all his servants, as he himself sends them one after another, that one will certainly be left with the insufficient building material and cease quiet. And consequently, without the acquirement which he needs to have at the coming of the Yahshua. 1 Corinthians 3:11-18. For other foundation can no man lay than that is laid, that is with the Yahshua, Son of Yahweh, as a foundation. Now, if any man build upon this foundation, gold, silver, precious stone, wood, hay, stubble, every man's work shall be made manifest, for the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by the fire, and the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. If any man's work abide which he hath built thereupon, he shall receive a reward. If any man's work shall be burned, he shall suffer loss, but he himself shall be saved. Yet so as by the fire, know ye not that ye are the temple of the Yahweh, and that the Spirit of Yahweh dwelleth in you? If any man defile the temple of Yahweh, him shall Yahweh destroy. For the temple of Yahweh is holy, which temple ye are. Let no man deceive himself. If any man among you seem to be wise in this world, let him become a fool, that he may be wise. Here we are told that the series wood, hay, stubble brought in by men whom the Yahweh has not sent, not in stars, such as I call your attention to at the beginning, series which appear to arise from a great store of the knowledge, which are devoid of the Spirit, are, as you already see, rubbish on which the fire of the Yahweh flies and the souls of men starve. And again, we are told that worldly wisdom is foolishness with the Yahweh, and that if we wish our structure of the truth to withstand the storm, we need to throw out the rubbish and take all of the Yahweh sent materials as we continue building. 1 Corinthians 3:19 and 20. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness with Yahweh. For it is written, He taketh the wise in their own craftiness. And again, Yahweh knoweth the thoughts of the wise, that they are vain. Since the wisdom of this world is foolishness with Yahweh, we had better have nothing to do with it and quit taking sides, one for the liberty, another for the wealthy, still another for the camel or white, that we had better stand with Yahweh and accept all of the truth from his servants. He chooses to stand. Otherwise, when we arrive at the door, he will have to say unto us, Depart from me, I never knew you. 1 Corinthians 3:21-22, Therefore let no man glory in men, for all things are yours, whether Paul or Apollos or Cephas, or the world, or life, or death, or things present, or things to come, all are yours. For the glory in the man, whether it be in the self or in another, is to cheat yourself of everything. Take the example, the Jews, for they are determined to be of the Moses, and as they saw it, for the accepting of the prophets, or even Yahshua unto them, it meant to give up the Moses as a result rather than all things being theirs. For they lost everything, even Moses. And where are they today? The wood, hay, and stubble, which they piled upon the structure of the church after the Moses left them, has long been swept away by the fire of the truth. For the Holy Spirit is the only safe way for the building is with the truth being sent from the throne of the Yahweh. That is how the Moses, the prophets, and the apostles built, and this is how we must build. Moses, for example, founded his structure of the truth on the solid rock of the creation. For the Genesis on the work of Him who created the worlds, Hebrews 1:1. For the prophets after Him also, the apostles continued building on the same foundation, not on the theories of the priests and rabbis, the so-called religious educators of that day, and that is why the structures of the truth stand today firmer than ever before. Knowledge, you see, devoid of the divine understanding, is as devastating unto the soul as is the fire that's being let loose in a house that is being built of wood and hay and stubble. Let us therefore no longer be side choosing, but come to the table which Yahweh has spread so abundantly with the spiritual food, and unbiasedly and free from the prejudice, feast to the full, refresh our souls and strengthen our backbones with the good understanding, so that we may be able to stand against the chronic ills of the worldly knowledge, that we overcome temptation in the strength of the mighty one, and be permitted to have a part in the proclaiming of the message when it shall swell into the loud cry. This brings in verse 3 of this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with this hour.